"Put it on," he said, with a grin from ear to ear. Although by now, another man becoming a house queen was the least revolutionary act in 2021, the wig in my hand gave me pause. This is Studio Confessions, the art and wellness podcast. I'm your host, Luis Martin, the art engineer. Let me take you with me. Listen in for conversations with artists and culture makers alike. As we talk about their creative practice and what moves them, let me share my wax poetic monologues and how to activate your creativity to live an inspired and more beautiful life. That's right, I said beautiful. Welcome to the studio. I'm glad you're here. It came in a padded envelope, like our groceries, our impulse buys, and the latest hopper to the mountain piles of books and magazines in my studio. But this package was loose and limber, not like the rigid heft of the books that make my hands sweat with gratification in my mailbox. In my head's inventory, I had nothing arriving that could fit this parcel. Elvis looked at me and giggled wickedly, like he does when we order pizza or burgers for dinner. Looking straight into his playful eyes, I could see a flashback playing out in his head. It was a conversation we had at his mother's house. He was the one that ordered it. "If I stay any longer in confinement, I'm gonna become a house queen," I said, with my best B. Arthur voice, but feeling more like a Miss Roper. Of course, I didn't mean it. I loved being at his parents' house because most of the time, I could talk to myself out loud and know no one was listening or taking me too seriously, including myself. Honestly, though, I couldn't imagine diving into another project, let alone performance art. Becoming a drag queen, even if just in my house, would be too much work, right? I've often talked about wigs and fantasized of becoming an old man with no hair, so I can just wear a nice silky wig and not have to toil with my frizzy locks and my pronounced forehead. Tearing open a padded envelope comes with that rush of dopamine. One more thing, one more possibility at a happier me. The wig was in a plastic bag. It looked like a spider resting, waiting to attack. I imagined it scurrying out of the bag and consuming my hair and head in one clean kill. My relationship with my hair has always been a painful one. I inherited my great-great-grandmother's Afro-Cuban thick, unruly hair. As the only one in my very small family to inherit this frothy bajo, my grandmother celebrated it, complimented it, and styled it for me, all through elementary school. For a while, I believed her. I thought others could see what she saw. Why wouldn't I believe her? She had straight, limp hair, much like the wigs that come in plastic bags. Her frothy bajo came by way of ritual perms every third week of the month. Her standard of volume and metric for perfection was the record cover she had pinned to the wall of Donna Summer sitting on a moon. Not me. Between the bullies at school and the beautiful children in Florida, dancing around on the 90s version of the Mickey Mouse Club on TV, I was assured it was not working for me. It worked for those kids in their stonewashed jeans, bouncing around with their shiny locks. They could part it, flick it, and endlessly use it to emote. From then on, all I had ever wanted was to feel the breeze in my hair. Well, that and the convertible in which to do it in, and the condo on the coast, to go to and fro, to feel the wind in my hair. I'm simple. In middle school, I befriended a retired bully of mine. She called me a fag, and I called her an Oreo. It was neither of our finest hours. But as it always happens, more can be accomplished with allies than with enemies. Sally was half Haitian and half Nigerian. On her walks to school, 75% of our conversations were about hair, her hair. On one fateful day, she uttered two words that would change everything for me: dark and lovely. My hair stood on its ends in full attention. I had no idea what she was talking about, but it was a gut instinct, so I took a mental note. It was one of those moments when you hear someone say something, but you're too embarrassed to ask, so you excuse yourself and rush home to Google it in the privacy of your own home. I had no Google then, nor did I have privacy at home. The next day, I got home with a box protruding from my backpack. I locked myself in the bathroom. I was 13. By then, my grandmother and my aunt were used to it and didn't ask any questions. I read the instructions the best I could. With the excitement and promise of hair that flowed in the wind, my dyslexia was on overdrive. I mixed the chemicals. Yellow potion to the white cream. Stir, comb in, ouch, ouch, ouch. Who cares? If it burns, it's because it's working. After the recommended 20 minutes were up, I left it in an extra 10, for good measure. When I rinsed the chemicals out, With what seemed to be rubbing alcohol coming straight from the faucet, I missed the other bottles in the box and washed my hair with the house shampoo. When I got out of the shower, I towel-dried my hair gingerly to relish the transformation, expecting to look like Luke Perry. That would have been nice. The tight jerry curls on my head hung with a dignified weight. They seemed rather pleased with themselves. Who was I to argue? I wish I could have been cool, but once I got out of the bathroom, there was no playing it cool. My grandmother looked at me, and after the shock, proclaimed that the hyper-mega curls on my head were a punishment from God for trying to mess with my natural beauty. I did not have the wit to question the dogma of her perming rituals, or even have the ammunition at that time of knowing about her skin whitening cream. But that's a chapter for another day. A few weeks later, I studied the instructions and synced up with my grandmother's schedule. Every third week of the month, I summoned the breeze through my hair. This podcast is sponsored by me and CollageDream.com. Get your collage kits and start making space for your personal narratives through collage. Want to dive in deeper? Take a collage therapy session. Nope, I'm not a doctor, nor am I an engineer, but I am an artist. Let me help you get through your blocks, creative inquiries, and guide your curiosity. Go to CollageDream.com. The studio is open. My husband has always been an ally, which was something that surprised me when I met him. Usually, I wear people down with my inane ideas and my gumption to go through with them. They never fail to be fun, if anything else. When you grow up around so much dysfunction, it becomes jarring when you're not ridiculed for not knowing long division or any division at all, or when you forget your PIN at the supermarket on a Tuesday afternoon during the pandemic. Even in the midst of spilled gasoline, broken iPhones, and misspelled mass emails, he's never made me feel stupid. I hope he can say the same. I've been known to go the extra mile for a laugh. It's another level of intimacy to sit naked in our bathroom as he combs the white cream in my hair, while my overbite bears the occasional sting of the relaxer doing its thing. "Put it on," he said, with a grin from ear to ear. I froze. Although by now, another man becoming a house queen, another gay man becoming a house queen, a queer person becoming a house queen was the least revolutionary act in 2021, the wig in my hand gave me pause, one that took me back in an instant. I was in the green shag carpet in the studio apartment my grandmother, aunt, and I, occasionally my father, shared. I was reaching under the bed, behind shoes and some rusty exercise equipment, behind multiple layers of darkness. I reached to pull out two dolls, my dolls, all part of the sociological experiment, you see. When I was a kid, my aunt was in college, the first in our family at that point, so my support was paramount. In her gender and sexuality studies class, she was tasked to perform an experiment about the relationship of nurture versus nature. The question was, would a red-blooded Mexican-American boy gravitate to playing with dolls the same way a girl would? Yes. She gave me a skirt as well, or that might have been all me. In a small crevice between the bed and the couch, I was granted a vast space to play, to imagine versions of myself without fear. I played with my dolls, wore my skirt, and twirled like a star, while Donna Summer winked with approval, all before Dad got home. The wig reminded me of all this, and not much else. This memory angered me to think of my childhood beyond the trauma and fear. I was grown. Those dolls, my aunt's safe space, allowed me to become a man that can wear a wig without blinking an eye. Big deal, right? It was huge. For years after elementary school, I'd permanently implanted a scowl on my forehead so that my eyebrows met in the middle and my eyes stayed permanently squinty. This rough mantle camouflaged me and warded off all malfeasance trying to test my masculinity. But while I did not want to be messed with, I also didn't want to hide, so I wore the occasional platform shoes to school, polyester shirts, accessorized myself with godfather rings and godmother necklaces, always topped off with my frown. It got me out of LA, mostly unscathed, but the idea of a wig back then would have sent me over the edge, like all the straight boys when I'd asked them questions about the homework. My disguise did not absolve me from being a pariah. "Put it on," Elvis repeated. With the past fading on my glazed eyes, I put the wig on. I felt like I was crowning myself into a higher power, a realm that I had seen in postcards, pictures, on TV, someone else's reality, someone else's world. Now I was in the scene, part of the painting. But I didn't feel pretty. All this time, in my 20s and 30s, in the back of my head, while I worked out and tried to exercise the last of my baby fat, I told myself, if all else fails, I can live happily ever after, like Miss Roper, floating in muumuus, a wig and a switch, to frame the high cheekbones my mother gave me. It would certainly be a MILF make. But through my fresh, low bangs, I could immediately see it wasn't so. In the mirror, my mother's cheekbones seemed pointier and poked out from behind the wig like boxes in a plastic bag. I did not see my mother or any other woman. In fact, I felt like a brute with a wig. I did not lean back in a graceful pose like a portrait of Peggy Guggenheim. My body did not syncopate to the poise and rhythm of a cat. Instead, I moved like a dog with new shoes, kicking the air to find balance. And this tickled me. I had the sudden urge to headbang, to propel the breeze in my new hair. I felt punk. Something inside me wanted to laugh, uncontrollably, uninhibitedly, laugh at myself. From behind the sleek, synthetic hair, I did transform. My face disappeared, and my body felt present, more visible. I could feel the hair on my arms and on my back. My chest felt broad, and my worn-out wife beater. There was no pretty girl emerging. The brute in me stepped forward, and I could feel my body responding. In a last attempt to find the sweetness I was missing, I accessorized with costume glasses, but nothing could soften the edge of my face or the hardness of my gaze. Elvis materialized with a comb and gingerly groomed me. He followed the beat of a jazz record on the turntable, and I stood perfectly still, looking like a werewolf lingering in mid-transformation. To anyone looking through our window, the scene must have looked like two deranged men in some sort of courting ritual. Inside, though, in our apartment on the 38th floor, we were children, in the middle of a meadow, guarded by clouds and soft light, unfazed by the sounds on the ground floor. The music played a little longer, until the needle reached the center of the record and broke our trance into uncontrollable laughter. After a commemorative photo shoot, which we'll never see the light of day, with my phone propped in the medicine cabinet, I ripped off the wig and saw myself in the mirror. Without the wig, my hair looked so short. I was a boy, a man again, or perhaps for the first time. That's it. Thanks for listening. If you've heard something that moved you, please share it. You are the candle that can ignite 1,000 flames. I am Luis Martin, the art engineer, sharing with you what moves me.